had a chairperson for this or not, so we've just self-appointed ourselves to do it. So so there's myself, I'm Jean, I'm from Saskatchewan, and we have Jessica, and Jessica's from the Yuma area, and we have Linda, and where are you from?
Tunnel Basin, Arizona.
From Tunnel Basin, Arizona. So today we're going to share a little bit on from obsession to detachment with love, and we're going to share for 10 to 12 minutes, and then we'll open sharing from the floor as well. So we'll get started. Jessica, would you like to start?
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. Okay. Hi, guys. Can you hear me fine? Okay. I'm Jessica, and I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. Hello. I'm not only I feel like I should start off by saying I'm not only a grateful member of Al-Anon, I'm actually an alcoholic as well. My recovery journey did not begin in Al-Anon. It began in AA. And then I slowly realized that there were alternatives, and Al-Anon was the second gift that I got, honestly. I'm just gonna share a little bit about how I guess agreed to do the panel. My sponsor, she was telling me about the names of all the topics, and of course I wanted to just jump off and do the first one. Which one? Okay. I wanted to do the first one because I just want to be of service, but I listened, and I think the third one was obsession to detachment with love, from obsession to detachment with love. And I didn't know that that was one for me, but I know I was obsessed, completely obsessed with my partner. And everybody, honestly, just obsessed with you guys and what you're thinking and how I could be like you. Or so I agreed to do this one. And he's probably not. I appreciate, but he's probably not. It's crazy because I was really nervous about doing this and speaking and judgment. But the topics flowed for me. It's okay, guys. The topics flowed. So I'll start with the reason I came to Al-Anon, and it was because of my partner, my ex-husband. And what's up? It's okay. He fixed it, right? Okay. So I came to Al-Anon because my spouse, just everything about it was just, I had tried everything it said in the welcome to the newcomer, everything, you know. My last one, I actually tried all of these without realizing I tried them, okay? I think one of them was having kids with them. Hello, my life. but the last one that I really tried was try drinking with them so that they wouldn't get so intoxicated. And of course, I wasn't nowhere near a program to even attempt that was a solution. It definitely wasn't. It was the one that got the ball rolling, and I lost myself, and I nearly lost my kids. You know, and then you know, AA brought me back, and I've been back ever since, and I haven't let go. So that was a huge blessing. But my friend told me about Al-Anon, and I tried it, but you guys were not giving me the answers that I wanted. You guys didn't tell me, you know, how to get them to stop or how to get them to behave correctly or respond to me or, you know, message me when they're out with the kids, like when they're gonna be back, like come on, like common sense things, you know, that are in my brain. But no, so I left, you know, I left. I came back though, you know, I realized that, slowly but surely, I realized that the only thing that I could actually change was myself. What you guys were trying to tell me was I could change myself, and I started to, I began doing that, changing myself. I didn't realize that it was for the better, because I had to do things that I was very uncomfortable in doing, like letting go of the relationship. I was in so much fear, but you know, here I am. I'm fine. I'm not bleeding to death. Like, you know, I'm completely fine. Like, look, I got so much help, and I don't even realize it. You know, it's beautiful. It really is. But one day at a time was extremely hard. So the what I wanted to discuss was briefly what I went through, I guess, for the obsession. Like I said, it started with my partner. It started with my husband, my ex-husband, and I thought my understanding of what was that? I worked step one, and it was talking about love and self-pity, you know? I had to learn that those were different things. And even after I did the step, I still didn't understand, you know? But it comes slowly, it really does. So I would obsess over what he was doing, where he was, who he was with, what he was wearing, where he was driving, who was around the kids, how much money he was spending, where he was spending it on. Slowly but surely, that turned to what my kids were doing, or what you were doing, or what my boss was doing, or just what anyone was doing. The obsession changed from him when he wasn't the important factor to the next important factor in my life. And I didn't know that that was something that it would do. So I had to again learn that what my sponsor says is whatever is outside of me is none of my damn business. Excuse me. she's like, listen. So, because I listen, but then I don't. yeah, it's shiny. Say something. I'm dying up here. You want to say something? yeah. So I had to slowly learn that whenever I wanted to get into other people's business, that's not a mine. Good. That means good job. I mean, that there's something I'm lacking in my life, in my person. And sometimes those are extremely hard to look at or even attempt to look at. I'm still struggling with a few things in my own life right now, but I give it time. You know, I give myself grace. I've learned that the God that I had when I was in, you know, growing up is not the God that I can have now, or at least the higher power of my understanding. I can be a loving, caring, compassionate person, and
I'm gonna hold it for you.
Okay.
Not a problem.
And I can be that, and my God can be that as well, you know. And sometimes I'm not gonna say I backslide or go backwards, because we always go forward. I use that in my head all the time. Oh, I backslided. Oh, I did this wrong. No, you did it how you're supposed to do it that day, you know, and you learned from what you were doing. You just keep on pushing. And that's what I've been trying to do now, is I've been more aware of my obsession to other people, my loved ones, my kiddos. They get the worst of it. Like, right now, I'm surprised I didn't, like, get mad at them, but I'm like, bro, your toy room is a mess. You guys gotta clean it up. And I've been telling them in my head, you need to clean up your playroom, you need to clean up your playroom. But, you know, it came out very nice. And most of the time, you get the fire-breathing dragon of a mother, you know? And sometimes that happens, and I have to check myself, make amends, and then sometimes help them clean it, or sometimes say, hey, mommy makes mistakes, but I'm gonna try not to do it again. Now with my partner, I can't apologize. I mean, I can. I'm not saying I'm not gonna apologize, but with my partner, if I apologize, it's just like floodgates of everything that's going on. So I'm just like, I still don't know how to respond to him sometimes, so I just don't, because I just don't know. And I know that he's still in his addiction, and it's not him that's talking, it's his disease. And he is not his disease, you know? He's someone else, and I need to realize that as well. So I've been, you know, praying for him. I've been getting out this detachment flyer, which is amazing. My sponsor tells me to read it all the time, and I still don't. Hi, you nervous? You okay? I've realized that I have to do what is best for myself, and to I have to do what's best for me, and my program, because I feel like I lost my train of thought right now. I have to do what's best for myself, because if I don't, if I get spiritually drained or whatever the case may be, I'm in trouble, honestly. I'm in big trouble. I am just extremely grateful for this program, because AA got me sober. It really did. It got me sober. It keeps me sober. The God of my understanding keeps me sober. But this program keeps me sane. Like, I don't want to kill everybody around me. The world is giving me like the wrong dealt of cards. Like, just looking at myself with like this, like everything bad is supposed to happen to me type of mentality. And I don't have that anymore. I used to. I know that I I have to be the happiness is homemade. It is. And I have to live that. And this program, Al-Anon NAA, helps me. And I'm a better mom for that. So that, I think that's all I got, guys.
That's a hard act to follow. All that cuteness. Let's see. I'm going to start a timer because I don't usually do this. Hi, I'm Linda.
Hi, Linda.
I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. So this topic, as soon as I heard about the topic, I was very interested. Those two words, obsession and detachment, especially detachment with love, you know, whew. And so the one word, obsession, I knew that word really well when I came in here, really well. I looked up some definitions for obsession. I actually got them out of a book that my husband has that's a dictionary made for AA, the big book of AA, and a 12 by 12 as well, there's two. Anyway, obsession. Compulsion, irresistible absorption of attention against my will, unwanted feeling or emotions, irrational and disturbing. That's pretty much where I was at when I came in here. I don't even think I realized it, but now that I've stepped back, I realize it, how sick I was. That obsession started when I was pretty young. I think it started with my dad, you know, desperate to please my dad. And then, you know, of course, other alcoholics in my life, whether it's a daughter, a husband, this obsession to manage people. It's sort of like the disease of alcoholism in a drinking alcoholic. The disease progresses. So like I heard it mentioned, it went from being focused on one thing and trying to control one thing and obsessing about one person. Before I came in here, I was obsessed with everything and everyone because I was just looking for somewhere where I had some power because nothing and nobody was doing what I wanted them to do. So yeah, I was pretty sick when I came in here. You know, I know that also from going to lots of open AA meetings that the alcoholic has an obsession they deal with. It's the obsession that they can drink with impunity and drink normally. So I have an obsession too, but my obsession is toward the relationships, toward the results of relationships with people. And so just as their obsession covers the gamut of tries, I had tried a lot, and I wanted to just recall, we were at a AA roundup with Al-Anon involvement in Laughlin about a month or so ago, and the Al-Anon speaker was a man, and when he got up to speak, the first words he said were, 553. We're all kind of like, huh, and then he goes, 553. He said, that's how many ways I tried to manage my wife's drinking. And, you know, then he went through some of them. And I'm thinking, huh, I did that. Oh, I did that too. And I did that a bunch of times. And, you know, it just made me realize. And it's so interesting that I just came, you know, just a month ago, I heard him say that. And here I am. I get to talk about this. And I didn't know I was going to talk in this panel. So anyway, it's the great obsession for me that I can manage other people and I can make sure that they approve of me, love me, make me happy, stay sober, whatever it might be. So that's the word I knew when I came in here. And then right away I started hearing detachment. And at first, all I heard was detachment. I did not hear the with love part. And my pendulum swung way over to the detachment side and the, you know, just not caring. And I wasn't very nice for quite a while. I had a lot of resentment that I was finally had permission to act out on, to be detached. So over time, and by coming back to meetings, listening to other people, how they do it, I finally found my way to detachment with love, which is why I love it, the theme of this roundup, which is language of the heart, because I was living all up here, and now a lot of the time I live right here. My detachment looks way different than it did when I first came in. And the way I got there, this is what I always think I want to talk about. So there's a lot of little tools I learned in here, like use the serenity prayer, you know. My sponsor used to say, go stand in the corner and say 10 serenity prayers right now. This is when I'm calling her about my daughter or whatever. The slogans are great for that because they're so simple. Sometimes they can break the circuit. Like I said, I would call my sponsor or talk with any trusted Al-Anon friend. There's things. And all that was foreign to me because I was very isolated when I came in here. I didn't want anybody to know the hell I was going through, I guess. But the real key for me was I worked these steps. I worked the steps, and 4, doing that inventory, 5, 6, 7, starting to get that humility started to seep into me from my fellow Al-Anons and from working the steps all the way through. And then all of a sudden, what happened was I was at step 12, and I had had the spiritual awakening, and I was plugged in with a power way greater than myself and way beyond my understanding. It's not of my understanding. This is a God way beyond what I ever thought. I keep saying there's a lot more going on here than I ever knew the more I immerse myself. And so I started to realize, so that's what really helps me break the obsession, is my help from my higher power. Of myself, I really don't do that good. I can try these tricks, and sometimes they work. Depends on how far down the road I've gone, what time of the night it is, you know, if I've heard from that daughter or if I've heard from that person, you know. But sometimes it's just got to be supernatural. And that's what I got in here by working the steps. I got deep into, how am I doing this? Hold on a second. Okay. Deep into what my motives were, rather than always looking at what they're up to. I was looking at myself. And I saw some things I didn't really expect to see. Like a lot of fear of abandonment, of not being loved or respected. And then I had this self-centered, this selfishness that I didn't want to feel bad. I didn't want to feel bad. And if the alcoholics in my life or whatever didn't get sober, didn't stay sober, didn't, you know, have a good life, I would feel bad. I mean, that's the cold hard truth. I didn't realize it until I realized it. I was just trying to protect myself. I wanted to feel good. And so, and I still want to feel good, and I get to feel good, and I feel a lot better than I felt. But I had to get honest with that, and I had to ask my higher power to balance that out a little bit and to have more of a heart-centered approach to all of this. And so I think I'm probably still at 553 today attempts. I don't think I've added a whole lot to it. Oh, except that one time with my daughter who I was worried about. I don't know. they sneak in, you know, they really sneak in. And so I think today I get to detach with love, and I'll just quickly read this and then I'll be done. I think the word detachment is often misunderstood. For me, detachment is the freedom to own what is mine and to allow others to own what is theirs. This freedom allows me to keep my own identity and still love, care about, and identify with the feelings of others. In fact, I believe that the degree of our humanity can be measured by our ability to know another person's pain and joy. I have been practicing the principles of Al-Anon to the best of my abilities for a long time, but when someone in the fellowship shares about having a difficult time, I can go right back to day one. I no longer live with that type of emotional pain, but I can feel theirs. I can identify without needing to remove their pain. To me, that is an Al-Anon success story. Today, I don't have to like everything my alcoholic loved one says or does, and I don't have to change her, even when I think she's wrong. And actually, my sponsor would say, that's none of my business to decide if what she's doing is right or wrong. It's not for me. I mean, she literally would tell me, it's none of your business. So I continue to learn how to care without taking everything personally. That's another really great thing I learned in these rooms is Q-tip. Quit taking it personally. It's not personal to me, especially when it's the disease of alcoholism. And I took it personally for a long time. So today's reminder says, I can detach and still love, still feel. I can learn to take care of my own business while allowing others to tend to theirs. Today I will detach without losing compassion. So that's what I think the theme means here. And it says, love your neighbor, yet pull not down your hedge. So I try to love my daughter and my husband and other alcoholics in my life, and even non-alcoholics who come within my focus, and just love them and let them be what they want to be. And the last thing is detach. Here's a great acronym for detach. Don't even think about changing her or him or it. Don't even think about it. And that helps me detach. Because if I'm not going to change him, why do I need to even decide what I think about what they say? So anyway, that's all I have. Thanks for listening.
Thanks very much to our other two speakers. My name is Jean. I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. I came into Al-Anon about 14 years ago this month. I don't know the exact date of when I got to an Al-Anon meeting, but we'd had a difficult weekend, and I was self-employed, so I was working at home on a Monday, and I thought, I've got to Google something about it, drinking, and the word Al-Anon came up, and I found a meeting. And that's how I got to my first meeting, that snowy Monday night in Saskatchewan. And I can remember sitting outside the church and thinking, if I walk in there, I'm going to make a public declaration of what I've been trying to hide for so, so long. And I had so much shame and fear and guilt and anger and anxiety. And you know, I think my obsessive thinking about it pushed me to some insanity. It really, really did. You know, I'd practiced some obsessive behaviors raising teenagers. I was a single mom raising teenagers. And I can remember my oldest daughter in grade 11 and 12 really was acting out and, you know, hanging with the wrong crowd and doing all the things that she shouldn't be doing. And I can remember laying on the bed when she didn't come home by curfew or 2 hours late or anything, and I would just say, God, just look after her. I can't anymore. And then I'd pace between the windows again, and I'd go back and forth. You know, you talk about obsession and powerlessness. I had it all. But I didn't I didn't really realize just, you know, how much living with someone that was in the deep throes of a disease could affect me. And, you know, I was a fixer, I was a motherer, I was a manipulator, I was a manager, and nothing worked. And all I was doing was counting bottles. I was pouring out booze. It was getting replaced. I was making excuses, and it just went on. And the longer it went on, the sicker I got, and my behavior really became completely unmanageable. So, you know, when I got to the meeting that first night, I think I sobbed, and people said to me, "You're in the right place." And I remember one lady said to me, or said to the group, she said, "You can love the alcoholic and you can hate the disease and not appreciate the behaviors, the actions, or the thoughts and words, but you can continue to love that person." And I didn't know that was detachment. I did not understand that, but I heard that message. And I can remember her sitting there, you know, separating it out. And that was the most powerful thing I heard that night. And I remember coming away from that meeting with an incredible amount of hope, because I knew that this person that in my life that was affected by this disease did not want it, did not want to hurt me with it, had no intention of doing anything harmful, but it was a disease. And so I started to feel a little bit differently about, you know, that aspect of it. So, you know, I kept going to meetings, and you know, in step one, I heard that I was powerless over alcohol. And so I was obviously powerless over my behavior, too. I was powerless over this obsessiveness that I had. And so if I was willing to do the first three steps of admitting I was powerless, believing that a power greater than myself could do something to help me, and then take step three and really truly believe it, that I could turn my will and my life over to God as I understood him, and I do call my higher power God, that I would be okay. And so I started to embrace the program, and I was ready to let go of other people's behaviors and what they were doing, because clearly, I wasn't doing anything that was working. But what I could do was wrap them up in this big, big blanket of love. Give them to God, ask God to guide them, ask God to look after them, and allow me time to look after myself. Because at that point, I was sick spiritually, physically, emotionally. There was nothing left of me. So the thing I had to do was detach. And before I got to Al-Anon, I wanted to detach with a meat cleaver, just chop them, be done, you know? And then I thought, no, I don't. This is a child of God that's sick. And, you know, part of my story is that I went to spend a weekend with a gal pal in Calgary, and just to get away and think. And I came home, and she and I had decided that a week away in Dominican would be good for me and her too. So we had planned this trip. And so I left on a holiday for a week, and not knowing what I was going to come home to. And I came home to a person that was sick, so physically sick. And my first obsessive personality would have said, get your bag packed and get out. But my Al-Anon time had taught me to say, you're sick, you need help, how can we help you? And you know, friend and myself did an intervention that night, and the alcoholic in my life surrendered and started his journey into sobriety. And it was so gentle. And you know, detaching with love is probably one of the things that made a difference to us in our relationship for sure. I've got a reading from How Al-Anon Works on page 84. It says, at first we might not detach very gracefully. Many of us have done so with resentment, bitter silence, or loud and angry condensation. It takes time and practice to master detachment. Beginning the process is important, even if we do it badly at first, and must later make amends. Detachment is far more compassionate and respectful than the unfeeling distancing or compulsive involvement many of us have practiced in the past. For when we detach with love, we accept others exactly as they are. And you know, so, you know, we started on that path of me loving the person, hating the disease, and feeling the compassion. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of gratitude on my part those first few days of sobriety in our home. The treatment center, the detox center, was full, so you know, we detoxed at home, and you know, I'd encourage him to come for a walk with the dog and I, and get him to pick up the poo, and you know, as he's gagging, you know, and I just thought, go for it, you know, and like, there was no compassion there, but, you know, that was something I had to make an amend for, because I wanted to see him hurt as much as I was hurting, and if, you know, that's how sick my behavior was too, and so we learned that we each had our own path, and I remember he came back from having coffee with his sponsor, and his sponsor had said, your marriage might not make it, but you can if you follow what AA tells you to do. And I thought, oh man, how can I fix that? You know, and I got back into that obsessive thinking of, you know, I'm gonna make sure this works. But I had to let him follow his path, and I was on my path. And so I got a sponsor, and thought about my gratitude for what I had in my life. And, you know, we didn't have the kind of loss of job, loss of money, loss of home, none of that. We had the functioning alcoholic who really, I think a lot of people at his business were shocked that he suffered with the disease. And so, you know, I received serenity when I detached with love. I received joy in my life. I looked after myself. I started doing things for myself rather than asking permission if I could go and, you know, go out for coffee with the girls or go curling or go to a movie or whatever. And so my independence started to make our own relationship healthier too. I wasn't relying on him. And I think that was really important. I think about some of the slogans for me, progress, not perfection. And you know, there is no perfect relationship. There is no perfect recovery. We have good recovery in our homes. I have slips that are more invisible than an alcoholic's slips. Their slips are really visible. My slips, not so much. But boy, when I get off the track, the wheels do come off the bus. So I just know this weekend, you know, I've had a tough week. This weekend I knew I was gonna be back on the bus, and I was gonna get a seat right in the middle of the bus, surrounded by love, recovery, and compassion from everyone in our programs. And for that, I am ever so grateful. So I'm gonna close that as my sharing, and we're going to open up the floor for people to share about detachment with love, or your obsession, or whatever is on your mind and heart.
Thank you. Thank you.